Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Picture this scenario. The capital city of this nation is run by a womanizing, cocaine-snorting, morally bankrupt tyrant. Imagine further that in the midst of a tryst with a highly placed government official, he discovers that she is taping him. Imagine further that in the ensuing dust-up, one of his minions shoots and kills her. And finally, imagine that a contractor witnesses it all and the mayor, seeing her, orders his minions to kill her as well. This is the premise for a great new book titled Capital City. The book is co-authored by our next guest, Tim Trainor. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ed, and thank you.
This sounds like an absolutely terrific book, but it is loosely inspired by actual events. Tell us all about it.
Well, I will say that for those of you who haven't been aware of this, there was a time when the city of Washington was in crisis. There was contract skimming. There was hints of corruption. There was cocaine snorting in the executive office. And my favorite, the city morgue had its electricity turned off.
That's not good.
Payment. Yes. Those were probably not the proudest or happiest times in the city of Washington, but like everything else, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to write a story and take the situation and put it on steroids so that the mayor was not simply corrupt in minor ways or ignorant of district responsibilities, but instead an out-and-out swindler and criminal and killer.
Ah.
Now, you can do that, I suppose, when you're the mayor,
mm-hmm.
But it is not the preferred style of leadership.
I would imagine so. That it doesn't really bode well for good relations with others and a good way to run the government. Now, this is loosely based, we mentioned, and the figure that comes to mind, of course, is Marion Barry, the former mayor of Washington. Now, he was such a flawed, tragic figure in so many ways. It's an example of someone who, once they attain a certain level of power, he just could not stay out of his own way.
The funny thing is, he was a very gifted fella.
Mm.
And his first couple of years in office, he did good things for the city of Washington. And he built a constituency that he never lost. But with the passage of time, I'm not inside his head, but it appears to me that he lost interest, or lost conviction, or lost his idealism. In any event, terrible things happened to the city, and because he was the person with whom the buck stops,
mm-hmm.
he was the person that we hold accountable. But I want to tell you, this is not a story about Marion Barry.
Mm-hmm.
That Marion Barry is the jumping-off point. This is a story about exotic, crazy adventures involving human beings, all of whom are flawed and all of whom are predictable. Now, after that great send-up that you gave to the story, you might think that you could figure out what happens. But it doesn't happen that way because people are strange and they're unpredictable, and nobody does what they're expected to do. The minion he sends out after that woman is, well, he's got an anger management problem, but he's also a great romantic and very lonely. The woman is no victim. She is shrewd, mm-hmm. and manipulative. And when the mayor finally realizes his mistake, he calls in a hitman, which I imagine played in the movie by Steve Buscemi. And the hitman is an absolute lunatic obsessed with Michael Dukakis. This is the way that things are, I suppose, in all cities, but it's certainly the way things are in Capital City.
See, what I like about this, too, and right there, see, you're thinking ahead. Already in your mind, you are precasting this movie. I like that very much. See, that's the key to being a successful author. Very nice.
Well, thank you, sir.
You know, I noticed as well when I was going through some of the notes for the interview, the book is described as a darkly hilarious political satire. It's nice when you can kind of create characters, but then take those characters into all different places. I mean, your imagination, your co-author Lee Hurwitz, it's the combination of these two imaginations that really can determine where and how darkly funny some of these things and some of these instances can go.
Well, I think you're exactly right, Ed. Capital City was based on real life, and the obligation of all writers, I think, is to do real people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do real people, you get darkly hilarious stuff, because we are darkly hilarious, every one of us.
And politics and the political system and the execution of politics in a modern society, it is such a ripe subject for juicy fiction. Why is that?
Well, because in politics, we're asked to expose our desires, our needs, and our wants. The politician is expected to respond to the gaping desires of his constituency. And so it's really raw. It's trading in dreams. It's trading in aspirations. The modern politician, at least in America, no longer administers to simple civic responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They minister to the needs of and desires and dreams of their people, and so they're really involved in the most human stuff of all.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in Capital City, we imagined a hungry city, a city hungry for wealth, for satisfaction, for justice, and the way that in this instance politicians manipulated the people and their desires to achieve this end.
When you co-author a book of fiction, I would imagine that it would present certain challenges, because when you're working on nonfiction, it's like, okay, did you do your research? Did you do yours? Do you have your footnotes? Okay, let's sit together and just compile everything and put it together. When you are working on fiction and you are only, again, restrained by your own imagination and the imagination of your co-author, what sort of challenges did that kind of bring up for you and for Lee? Or was it almost, I don't know, enlightening to be able to bounce ideas off somebody else before you actually put them on paper?
Well, actually, it was neither of that, Ed, although mm-hmm. both of those are reasonable surmises. The fact is that Lee is a person with no ego. He came to me with the first draft, and he recognized that it wasn't doing what he wanted to do in the story. And so he asked me to see if I could make it closer to his objective.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about it. We talked about how it could come out and what characters we would need to add in and what characters we'd need to take away. And we had a sort of working agreement. And then I worked on the novel and I sent my drafts to him. And except in a couple of cases, he approved them. In those couple of cases that he did not, he was right. So that's pretty much how it worked for us. And for another set of collaborators on fiction, it might be quite different. But it was very smooth for us.
And each relationship between authors is different, obviously. So obviously you found a good, workable relationship between the two. Because when I first realized I was going to be interviewing someone who co-authored a piece of fiction with someone else, my mind goes weird places. I remembered an old episode of Columbo where one author decides to bump off the other. Jack Cassidy knocks off Martin Milner, and hopefully there's no chance of that happening here, I would imagine.
There would be zero chance.
There you
of that.
Go.
Just on the basis of competence. I have to tell you, we can write about people murdering each other.
See?
But actually carrying them out, we're too old and
very good.
Hyper-civilized
very
for that.
Very good. Now, your background, you're a trial attorney for the federal government. Lee works for the Library of Congress. So with both of you, quote unquote, in the arena, so to speak, it's not that difficult to kind of find ideas and cultivate thoughts and characters for Capital City, I would imagine.
You're exactly right, Ed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we discussed, I would say, over 150 different ways to do the novel, all based on things that we've seen or bumped up against or dealt with in our personal and professional capacities. And I know that Lee is working on another novel. I have an idea that I'm developing. This city, this capital city, is rife with opportunities for story.
And I would imagine over the next 4 years, it's going to become even more ripe for many more stories as well.
Well, I'm constrained to remember what H.L. Mencken said.
Yes.
Which is, democracy is a theory that the people know what they want and deserve to get it good and hard.
Very good. Very good. It's, you know, it's funny. It's the second time in 3 weeks H.L. Mencken has been referenced on this show. We had Norman Lear on a couple of weeks ago, and he brought Mencken up as well. So,
well, he may be back in style after a while, I think.
I think so. I think you're onto something there. Well, once again, the book is Capital City. It sounds terrific. It makes a great holiday gift as well. Tim Trainor, best of luck with the book. Thank you so much for joining us here on America Weekend.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalegi, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Where are you likely to overspend? Name the places where you're likely to blow the budget and maybe go in debt. Here's the social science of it. First off, parents are likely to overspend on their children, especially during the holiday. The typical kid asks for 4 or 5 presents, and the typical parent gives 7 to 10. We also overspend on our pets. There are entire stores devoted to Fluffy and Fido. We're also likely to overspend when it comes to college. The difference between state and private college is astronomical. Finally, we're likely to overspend on weddings. What's the cheap psychological trick? Humans spend more when emotions are out of control. To avoid overspending, just put time between you and any purchase. Got a question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This explosive receiver was always a threat to go the distance. He initially passed up the NFL for bigger money in the CFL, but he's remembered as one of college football's most electrifying players.
He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone. Touchdown, Irish.
So, where is Rocket Ishmael now? Rocket made some bad investments after his playing days, but he rebounded and got behind Bite Tech, a company that produces cutting-edge mouthguards for athletes. Rocket also appeared on the reality TV competition Pros vs. Joes.
The Rocket delivers!
With the Rocket speed, deliveries are never late. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappylandAudio.com. That's HappylandAudio.com.